This episode is brought to you by Progressive Insurance. Whether you love true crime or comedy, celebrity interviews or news, you call the shots on what's in your podcast queue. And guess what? Now you can call them on your auto insurance too with the Name Your Price tool from Progressive. It works just the way it sounds. You tell Progressive how much you want to pay for car insurance, and they'll show you coverage options that fit your budget. Get your quote today at Progressive.com to join the over 28 million drivers who trust Progressive. Progressive Casualty Insurance Company and Affiliates. Price and coverage match limited by state law.
We really need new phones.
T-Mobile will cover the cost of four amazing new iPhone 15s, and each line is only $25 a month.
New iPhone 15s? It's better
over here. Only at T-Mobile, get four iPhone 15s on us and four lines for $25 per line per month with eligible trade-in when you switch.
Minimum of four lines for $25 per line per month with auto pay discount using debit or bank account. $5 more per line without auto pay, plus taxes and fees. Phone fee at 24 monthly bill credits for well qualified customers. Contact us before canceling account to continue bill credits or credit stop and balance on required finance agreement due. $35 per line connection charge applies. See T-Mobile.com.
Sports Radio 610 presents Payne and Pendergast, presented by Allied Home Security.
All right, so the Houston Texans, ESPN does a little exercise where they rank the teams 1 through 32 for how they're going to do over the next 3 years. They've been doing this every year. It is interesting to go back and look at some of the previous years. And if you're a Texan fan, it's a little depressing to go back and look at, say, 2018, 3 years ago, where the Texans weren't lighting the world on fire. They were coming off of a season where they had gone 4-12, but they went 4-12 because Deshaun Watson tore his ACL. Back 3 years ago, they were 15th in these rankings. They were forecasted to have the 15th best next 3 years. You could argue they probably ended up being right. I mean, I know they were 4-12 this past year. They won a couple divisions the next couple of years. So maybe the overall projection was right for those three seasons. But ultimately, we are where we are right now. And the Texans in this ranking, Seth, and the way it's done is they've got a panel of their experts. Four of their experts on ESPN.com have graded each of the teams in five categories with essentially numerical grades that kind of mirror report card grades. You know, 100 is an A+, 90 is an A, 80 all the way down into the 50s. The five categories are overall roster, not including the quarterback. Then the quarterback gets his own category. And then coaching, draft, front office. And the first two things are weighted the most, the overall roster and the quarterback. The Texans, according to the band of experts at ESPN, right now, of those five categories, they are last in the league in overall roster, coaching, and draft. They are second to last in quarterback. Comparatively, Nick Caserio is getting mad love. The front office is 22nd in the league. So comparatively speaking, the front office is getting mad love, but this is a team that is not a lot of optimism being generated right now.
You know what's interesting about these types of rankings in this day and age is, and look, obviously there's always going to be a lot of inaccuracies. they're not going to nail this. It's just a fun thing to do in July. But especially these days, the teams that you feel most pessimistic about also have the best chance at landing a young, electrifying quarterback.
Yeah.
And unlike the old days where it took 3 or 4 years for a quarterback to develop, now if you got a good one, he tends to produce right off the bat. You know, like the Bengals. I'm guessing, Sean, in the 2018 one, I'm guessing the Bengals were somewhere near the bottom in terms of how you should expect them over the next 3 years.
Yes.
And that was when they had Andy Dalton, who's a good enough NFL quarterback, you know, like an above, sometimes very above average, sometimes just above average NFL quarterback. But they end up with Joe Burrow, and right now I'm guessing the Bengals are near the top of the list. They made some additions on offense. So it's a quick turnaround in terms of how promising you can be when you're at the bottom of this list because of the quarterback situation and how it's developed. The quarterbacks just, they can make a bigger impact, and they can do it faster than they ever have before in NFL history.
Yeah, to that point.
The Texans just seem to be in a weird spot where, oh, yeah, they had that guy.
Right.
They had him.
Right.
And now they don't.
No, now they don't. And to your point, 3 years ago, the bottom three teams were Buffalo 30th. Well, they just drafted Josh Allen 2 months before this ranking came out. Cleveland at 31st. Well, they had just drafted Baker Mayfield a couple months. Both those guys have worked out to varying degrees. Josh Allen is a near MVP. And then Miami was 32nd. And I don't know that they've solved their quarterback issues, but they certainly accumulated enough draft capital to where they were able to get it turned around in a few years. Now, as some texters have pointed out, because I brought this up earlier in the show, those three teams being in the bottom, and now they're all double-digit win teams. Someone said, yeah, but they were bad for like a decade before 2018.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? Like, it's not as though the process took just 3 years to get there.
It's like, yeah, you're bad and then you're good.
Yeah,
the Bills, to wit, the Bengals have not won a playoff game in, how many years is it now? Is it 30 years?
It's a long time. Probably Boomer Esiason was probably their quarterback.
Now, you could argue that part of the problem with the Bengals was that they were stuck in that no man's land of like being pretty good, but not good enough forever. And it just kept them mired in that same spot. The Bills likewise didn't win a playoff for well over a decade. And so, yeah, it's not, don't get me wrong. It's not as simple as just, oh, all right, now we're bad. So this is our turn to be good next, right?
Yeah. You know what's interesting about this particular exercise for this season, Seth, with ESPN? And again, if you're just tuning in, this is a projection of the teams and what they're going to do over the next 3 years. The Texans are 32nd out of 32 teams. The team that is the most hot after Deshaun Watson right now, reportedly, the Eagles. The Eagles have three first-round picks potentially. They have an owner who seems very motivated to get Deshaun Watson. They are a team, I think, most importantly, that is into giving second chances to players, and Deshaun Watson may need a team like that depending on what the fallout is from all of his legal troubles. You know, they gave Michael Vick a second chance. There have been others through the years they've given second chances to. The Eagles are 30th on this list right now. You know what I mean? And I've said this about Deshaun's situation before, is that, yeah, I know the Texans have their own set of dysfunction going on right now. I know that they've made a lot of poor decisions, generally speaking. You don't get to be where they are right now by making good decisions. But I don't know how much greener the grass is going to be at a lot of these places that Deshaun is looking at. You know, I haven't looked to see where the Broncos are on the Denver Broncos, 24th. You know, the Eagles, 30th. You know, Miami is probably the one place that Deshaun could potentially end where you go, all right, well, he's landed in a much better situation. But even they're 15th on this list. You know what I mean? So that's the other thing that jumps out at me as we're sort of comboing Deshaun Watson as a topic in this three-year projection, is that how happy is Deshaun going to be? Is Deshaun a big enough game changer to all of a sudden take the Eagles from being 30th on this list to being 9th on the list, something
like
that.
Well, and the other thing, this is what I'd say too, Sean, and this is the issue I have right now with what ESPN is saying about the Texans' upcoming season and where they rank those groups is putting the Texans at 32nd on the quarterback situation.
Mm-hmm.
Yes, they lost Deshaun Watson. That's awful. That's abysmal. Tyrod Taylor is not Deshaun Watson. But I think the problem with Tyrod Taylor is he's a hard guy to pin down. And people don't know quite what to make of Tyrod Taylor. The fact of the matter is he's been a pretty serviceable quarterback, you know, and at times an above-average quarterback when he's had a chance to be the legitimate starter. But then he's been this bridge starter for these last few years, and people just don't know quite what to make of him. This is where, look, I'm making a depressing argument that, hey, no, the Texans aren't going to be the absolute worst team in the league. But I think that if you look at the worst teams in the league, oftentimes they also have one of the worst performing quarterbacks in the league. So am I to believe that Tyrod Taylor is going to be worse than every single rookie quarterback? Is he going to be worse than Sam Darnold? Is he going to be worse than perhaps Drew Locke if he ends up playing the whole year for the Broncos?
Sure.
Or like, it's hard for me to believe that Tyrod Taylor, who's never really had a genuinely bad season as an NFL starter and was doing it on a team that wasn't all that great with the Bills, is it really a slam dunk that he's going to be the worst quarterback in the league this year? I don't think that's a slam dunk or a guarantee whatsoever.
No, I don't either, and I think he's playing behind an average offensive line, which, you know, he's not going to be running for his life in all likelihood. Yeah, Seth, look, start at the bottom of this list and work up. Tyrod Taylor, the 31st best team on here is Detroit. Jared Goff sucks. Goff stinks. The 30th best team is the Eagles. They've got Jalen Hurts as of right now at their quarterback. Now, 29th is the Bengals, and Joe Burrow is considered on here to be the 13th best quarterback situation. So that's a team that has some serious upside because they've got an exciting young quarterback. And then there's Derek Carr for the Raiders, and then there's Justin Fields is a rookie for the Bears. You're right. Matt Ryan, the Falcons are 26th. Daniel Jones and the Giants are 25th. Drew Locke and the Broncos are 24th. You're right. And you're not seeing, look, the Carolina Panthers and Sam Darnold are 23rd. You're not sitting here making an argument that the Texans are going 10-7 this year and making the playoffs, but the slam dunk part of them, though, they're going to be the worst team and it's written in the stars. Tyrod Taylor's probably good enough to go get you 5 or 6 wins.
Well, and the part about Tyrod Taylor, and this is where I don't know how to predict it either, is that when he was with Buffalo, they used his legs very effectively, you know, in the designed run game as well. And he's getting older now, and you don't necessarily want him to be running the ball as much as Josh Allen or anything. But those are that's a hidden benefit of Tyrod Taylor that doesn't show up in the passing stats. But I think people overlook it because he's not a Lamar Jackson. He's not a ridiculously studly runner. But man, he can use them to his advantage, and he's smart and savvy enough to not get himself in trouble. Yeah, that's why I say that the Texans, much like the Miami Dolphins, may have messed up this offseason and put it together a good enough team to win 5 games.
Okay, well,
that's their biggest mistake.
I'm bringing this up with you right now because I know we'll see this on the text page, because every time we bring this up, when you and I sit here and say they could win 5 games, 6 games, we see it on the text page. Hey, they won 4 with Deshaun Watson last year. What leads you to believe they could win 5 with Tyrod Taylor at their quarterback? What would be your counter-argument to that?
My counter-argument would be you are also going to have to bank on the defense at least just not being horrid, like not being one of the worst defenses in recent memory or history. That's the big caveat there, because like realistically, Deshaun Watson won 8 or 9 games last year. The defense, I'm almost saying that literally. I mean, I, off the top of my head, I can think of 3 games where he had game-winning drives that were either deleted by Nick Martin or the defense.
Right. Or Kiki Kiki,
Yeah. So I think at least part of it is that. Now, I would argue against myself in saying, you know what, the Texans also have, you know, based on whichever advanced stat guy you want to go to, they've got one of the toughest schedules, you know, when it comes to projected win totals of opponents and whatsoever. Yeah. So, some of it comes down to dumb luck. If you look at an NFL team, if they're capable of winning 4 games, then they're capable of being 6-10. They're also capable of being, you know, 3, or excuse me, I'm messing up the 17-game season, man.
But your point is well taken. A play here, a play there is the difference between 3 wins and 7 wins sometimes.
A 4-win team in the NFL also means that that same team could easily win 1 game. They could easily win 7 or 8 games.
That's right.
So I think that Tyrod Taylor's risk management and running ability are good enough for a few wins versus some of the inferior opponents, and then every now and then, you know, the better every year one of the best teams in the league loses to one of the worst teams in the league. So it's viable, and I'm not sitting here saying that, like, no, you guys are sleeping on the Texans, they're gonna be awesome. No. I'm not saying that whatsoever. I'm just saying if what you fear or what you hope for is a 0-win or a 1-win season, I think you'll be either disappointed or at least a little bit pleasantly surprised.
There you go. All right. We have not talked yet about the Seth, while you and I were gone, there were big sea changes in collegiate athletics. We've been in the name, image, likeness era now for 3 weeks. Is this the greatest thing or the ruination of college sports? There is one particular personality that thinks this is going to be something that kills collegiate sports. We'll let you hear from him next.
We really need new phones.
T-Mobile will cover the cost of 4 amazing new iPhone 15s, and each line is only $25 a month.
New iPhone 15s? It's better
over here. Only at T-Mobile, get 4 iPhone 15s on us and 4 lines for $25 per line per month with eligible trade-in when you switch.
Minimum of 4 lines for $25 per line per month with auto pay discount using debit or bank account. $5 more per line without auto pay, plus taxes and fees. Phone fee at 24 monthly bill credits for well qualified customers. Contact us before canceling account to continue bill credits or credit stop and balance on required finance agreement due. $35 per line connection charge applies. See T-Mobile.com.
All right, football fans, the NFL Draft is almost here, and the free Odyssey app brings you the latest coverage from the biggest sports radio stations across the country. Which players will help your team the most? Who will make a draft day trade? Will they be ready for week 1? The local conversations about the team you love. All streaming free right here on the Odyssey app. AUDACY. Download it today.
Yeah. Sports Radio 610 presents Payne and Pendergast.
Sean Pendergast, Seth Payne with you. While we were away on vacation, Seth, on July 1st, the NCAA basically opened up the floodgates, allowing athletes, scholarship athletes, to go negotiate their own name, image, and likeness deals. And so we're starting to see collegiate athletes doing sponsorships, doing commercials, doing appearances for various businesses out there, and making some pretty good coin in doing it.
Isaiah Spiller got $10,000 for was he one of the two guys up at A&M that got $10,000 to do an appearance in an interview with Tex Eggs?
Yeah, he may have been. Yeah, I'm looking at the picture on the story that you put right here, and that's Isaiah Spiller in the story. Yeah.
Isaiah Spiller. It was Isaiah Spiller and Damani Richardson, the safety. They got $10,000. It was the way the headlines made it seem. It made it seem like Tex Eggs was paying them $10,000 just for the interview, when it was actually part of an event sponsored by Green Print Real Estate Group.
Right.
So it was a whole. It was more like an appearance fee than anything that included an interview by Tex Eggs. So Tex Eggs did a good job of injecting themselves into the conversation there. But it's. It's a lot of money. $10,000 is a lot of money. A lot of rookies in the NFL aren't getting a $10,000 appearance fee.
No, they're not. They're not. And it's a great recruiting tool if you're Texas A&M's coaching staff. Now, we're 3 weeks, not even 3 weeks into this era. So it's going to be really interesting to see how this stuff plays out over time. Charles Barkley was on a podcast. He and Ernie Johnson do a podcast called The Steam Room. And they had Mike Krzyzewski on there as a guest, and obviously Duke basketball. Now, Krzyzewski's not going to be around to deal with the major ripple effects of this going forward. He's heading into his last year as head coach of Duke basketball. But Duke basketball would clearly be one of the collegiate sports programs that would have players coming in who would be able to command top dollar for various endorsements and sponsorships and things like that. Charles Barkley is quite skittish about what this NIL stuff could do to collegiate sports.
Between his name, image, and likeness, this thing that just came down from the Supreme Court, I think we get ready for Armageddon. I mean, you said earlier, we're in trouble right now because I have no idea what's going to happen in the next few years of college sports. How many programs are going to be disbanded? How many sports are going to be canceled?
So that's Barkley. So Barkley thinks this is potentially something, Seth, that could crater collegiate sports.
Did he go on to explain exactly how that would happen?
Here's one more from Charles Barkley on the NIL arms race.
This clearly going to become an arms race. Because if I'm a kid and I got to decide where to go to college, I said, football's a little bit different. But you're going to say to yourself, well, what can I sell the most jerseys? Where can I get a car deal? I'm going to a big school. But I only got to be there for 6 months. I'm really concerned of where college athletics are going in the next 5 years. I'm really concerned about that.
Okay, just to be clear, the 6 months part, he's obviously referring to one and dones in college basketball, not college football with that.
Yeah, look, I understand the concerns, and I think they're valid concerns. I guess the one question where I would urge everybody to pump the brakes a little bit, and maybe Charles was talking more about basketball than football. I don't know. Are we worried about all of a sudden there being a scenario, Sean, where only a few select teams are in contention at the end of year
right.
every year? Oh, dear. Oh, me. Oh, my. Oh, goodness. I didn't realize. Are you suggesting there might be a situation where something like perhaps Ohio State, Clemson, in Alabama, some of the only teams that ever have a chance at our glorious championship every single year at the end of the season. Well, I'll tell you what, I shall not stand for such injustice where the haves have so much power over the have-nots. No, sir, I cannot abide by that. I stand for justice. I stand for equality. I stand for, pretty much the same team still being at the top.
Right.
Now, if anything, it's an opportunity for some of these other teams to say, like, oh, okay, well, you know what? Oh, I'm sorry. Did Alabama just get – are you getting a $10,000 interview at Alabama? Oh, you're not? Okay, well, here we are. And I say this is a chance for more of the mid-tier teams to actually compete if they can figure out a way to align with their wealthy alumni.
Yeah, I would agree with you. To me, it's not the kind of game changer that all of a sudden makes the great schools potentially greater. You know what I mean? Like, their scholarship limits. It's not like Alabama can all of a sudden go get twice the players, right? Like, they max out on their scholarships every year. This is really just an opportunity for those kids to actually get a piece of the pie in this whole thing.
Saban is at the point. I encourage anybody, whenever anybody brings up the issue of underclassmen entering the draft with Nick Saban, I encourage you to listen closely, because he's almost gleeful about it. Like, Nick Saban, you would think Nick Saban would be the guy that's, like, bullying people into sticking around and staying in school. Like, Nick Saban can't keep enough, he doesn't have enough snaps to go around at his program, because he's got so many good football players. So when some guy leaves early, he's like, hell yeah. Because you know what? When he leaves, that's just more enticement for the next guy coming in the door. Yeah. This is a way to fight back if you're A&M. Look, it wasn't A&M. It wasn't Alabama. It wasn't Clemson that you heard, saw the headline about two players getting a $10,000 exclusive interview payment. It was Texas A&M, a team that has not, as of yet, been able to genuinely compete with a team like Alabama. So now, at the lower ends, it's going to be, the teams that are at the lower end of the spectrum are going to continue to be at a disadvantage the same way they've been at a disadvantage. Oregon, who has one of the wealthiest alumni in all of sports that helps fund a whole lot of stuff, and their partnership with Nike, they'll continue to have an advantage there. Like, none of this is all just, you're moving shells around.
Yeah.
The same amount of money is going to be spent. The same amount of adulation is going to be poured on these kids. You're just going to do it with different currencies. And you know what? Uncle Sam is actually going to be able to tax it now instead of when it's under the table like before.
That's the things I would be concerned about if I were a coach. The things I would be concerned about is, one, how big a distraction does it become for kids on my team? You know what I mean? Like, are they, coach, I got to cut out of here. I got an autograph session I got to go get to. Or you've got all these different, now not only are you managing, presumably, academics and the athletics. We already hear about how few hours they have. Now we got one more thing that you're managing if you've got some sponsors and things like that and responsibilities to them. So that would be something I would be concerned about. Now, the flip side to that is, Seth, that I do think if kids are smart about this, they can treat it as an opportunity to learn how to manage money when it's not seven figures worth of money to screw up. It's only five figures worth of money to screw up. You know what I mean? Like, this is a good opportunity for kids to get real life practical experience taking that money. Hopefully they've got the right people in their ears and they don't have people reaching into their pockets for the money. That's why I call it an opportunity, not a lock, but it's an opportunity to actually learn how to manage money a little bit.
I think that's a good point, Sean. From a player's perspective, and this is something the players themselves brought up, and I think Isaiah Spiller's dad talked about this. Isaiah Spiller's dad basically is like sat down this summer and tried to figure out how to organize all this for him.
Yes.
And so he doesn't get distracted, and so he can just manage this. But one thing that I think it was Isaiah Spiller's dad brought up was, you know, the issue of jealousy from teammates. You want to be careful and be sure that you're not creating jealousy. Because in college, look, $10,000 is not life-changing money. But in college, it kind of is.
Yes. You know, like, yes.
In the NFL, the NFL, some guys are making $500,000. Some guys are making $30 million. They're all making a lot of money.
Right.
In college, some guys are flat broke. So the guy with $10,000 is he's comparatively extremely rich.
Can you imagine rolling around a college campus with, figuratively, not literally. I wouldn't think Isaiah Spiller's got a roll of hundreds in his pocket. But, like, dude, with 10 grand, like 10 grand for a college student is like, It's like $500,000 for a regular person.
Let me tell you something. For all the people that are worried that somehow this is going to destroy the entire system and somehow, oh my gosh, how will future professional athletes handle actually being paid money already? I don't know. Like, I went to school with a bunch of rich kids whose parents gave them a lot of money. I knew a couple kids that had basically like carte blanche on their credit cards.
Oof.
And you know what? Capitalism survived. Those kids are doing just fine now as adults too.
Yeah.
It's just because now some kids that have never gotten like actual handouts are getting handouts. Maybe our whole financial system is buttressed by rich kids who stay rich.
Yep.
So some other kids getting handouts from not their mommies and daddies in college, but from alumni. It's not going to be the end of the world.
Nope. All right, Payne and Pendergast with you on a Tuesday, and a reminder: we are 9 days away from the NBA draft. It's next week. It's a big one for the Rockets. They got the number 2 overall pick. They've got 2 other first-round picks 23rd and 24th. So what do you need more than anything else? You need the Ultimate Mock Draft 2021 podcast presented by the Locked On Podcast Network and by Odyssey. You can find it wherever you get podcasts. You can find it on the Payne and Pendergast podcast feed as well, I believe is where we are storing that here as a station. It started yesterday. It's 5 days worth of mock draft, and this is a great way to get primed on the NBA draft, including our insider, our Rockets insider, Adam Spillane, is breaking down the number two pick in the mock draft today, in today's edition of the podcast. It's former GM Ryan McDonough, NBA champion Brian Scalabrine, coach Jimmy Patsos. They're joined by NBA draft expert Chad Ford, and they're going to give you all the analysis and insight that you need to be up to speed on the NBA draft. Rockets picking 2, 23, and 24. Get opinions from experts, great opinions, in the Ultimate Mock Draft 2021 presented by the Locked On Podcast Network and by Odyssey. Up next, we've got news. We talked about Deshaun Watson. There is the other disgruntled quarterback. His name is Aaron Rodgers, and news coming out today about Aaron Rodgers, it may indicate that he is dug in on staying away from the Green Bay Packers. We'll tell you what it is next.
Live from the Twin Peaks Studios, Sports Radio 610 presents Payne and Pendergast.
Sports Radio 610. Breaking news. Powered by Odyssey. Brought to you by the NBA. The NBA playoffs are happening right now. Don't miss out on the action.
All right, so this is breaking news in the NFL. Probably more relevant to fantasy owners than anything else, but one of the fine young running backs in the league last year was Cam Akers of the Rams. Suffered a torn Achilles this morning, according to Tom Pelissero of the NFL Network. So Cam Akers,
get that money, young running backs, hold out. Is I think NFL running backs should hold out after their first good game. That's
exactly.
Cam Akers will never get another multi-year contract in his life after his rookie contract.
Torn Achilles, yeah, for Cam Akers. Now, here's why I bring this up, because you're probably going, I'm a Texan fan. Why do I care about Cam Akers? Field Yates retweeted, said, next men up in the Rams' backfield include Daryl Henderson, Raymond Calais, Jake Funk. You know, that's not exactly huge names there. Now, there's some free agents out there, potential free agent veteran running backs, Adrian Peterson, Duke Johnson, he mentions, LeSean McCoy, Le'Veon Bell. Seth, the reason I bring this up is because, and I'm not saying this is going to happen with the Texans and the Rams, but Cam Akers will not be the last running back to go down for the year in this case, before training camp, but come training camp, he will not be the last running back to go down for the year. There's injuries every year. I do think part of the strategy, particularly at the running back position with Nick Caserio and the Texans, stockpiling some of these veteran guys, is that if a team has a guy, they lose a guy to injury, they can flip Mark Ingram over to him for a sixth round pick or something like that, or trade
right.
him David Johnson. They've got and it's not just running back. I mean, they got a bunch of these guys on 1 year deals at all these positions. I think that there's a dual purpose going on with the Texans with signing all these, really three purposes. One is to not clutter up the books with big contracts. That's number one. They've been successful with that. Regardless of what these guys do, they are not clogging the salary cap with a lot of money. Number two, I think there is an element of establishing the culture going forward, and you can agree or disagree that it's the right thing to do, but that is part of the strategy. And I do think three, there is a garage sale sort of thing going on, low key. Nick Caserio will never say that, but if I'm Nick Caserio and I look at a team losing their starting running back for the year, I'm making a phone call to see if you want any of these. Do you want David Johnson, Philip Lindsay, Mark Ingram, you know, whatever.
Yeah.
Just to see if you might be able to flip them and get some draft equity.
I think there are two things going on with the Texans right now, it would seem, that don't necessarily have to do with winning football games this year. One is everything that you just explained about having guys that, you know, just like the Texans were willing to trade for Duke Johnson because, they needed a running back right in the middle of training camp. Somebody might be willing to do that with one of the Texans running backs this year. But two is I think establishing a culture or whatever that means, kind of establishing a baseline. Maybe it's as simple as getting rid of guys who are anti-Jack and why am I blanking on Jack's last name?
Easterby?
Easter Beam. My goodness. I think he cast a spell on me. Put a hex on me with that black magic of his.
When you couldn't remember the name, I'm thinking, is he talking about another Jack?
All of a sudden, I start convulsing, and like my tongue turns literally black.
There's goo coming out of Jack's face.
Jack's up and Jack's down in the bowels of NRG Stadium with like 20 candles lit, doing some incantation in Latin. Maybe there's a voodoo doll there.
I was going to say, I love how he's a voodoo doctor now. Yeah.
Just for good measure.
Right.
Just in case. Because otherwise, it doesn't make any sense, Sean. You're right. This running back roster right now doesn't make any sense. You've got David Johnson with a good chunk of guaranteed money. You've got Mark Ingram with a nice enough contract, but, you know, like an appropriate contract.
Yeah.
Philip Lindsay and Rex Burkhead. Yeah. There's four guys right there that are veteran players that you would expect to get some play time. Most teams keep three running backs, and their third one is a special teams player.
Yeah.
So that could be Rex Burkhead. Rex Burkhead has been a spot player as a running back. I think some people outside of New England mistakenly think that Rex Burkhead was like a bell cow for them or something because he shows up in big games. He's had some really big games in the playoffs and in key games. But he's been a spot player, but who also plays special teams. So Rex Burkhead is your number three, leaves either Ingram or Lindsay or David Johnson outside of that circle. And yeah, it very, very likely that one of them gets traded.
Yeah. So I point that out. Cam Akers down with an Achilles tear. This is one angle as a Texan fan that you're going to watch other training camps this year. Are there other training camps where you have some injuries where the Texans and Nick Caserio might be able to flip some of these guys and see if you can get a little something for them?
I think especially with Mark Ingram. Mark Ingram is classically that kind of guy who I think a lot of teams would look at him as a guy they'd love to have around for the playoffs.
Mm-hmm.
Even if he's on the Texans and healthy and the Texans are sellers at the trade line, there's somebody else out there, you know he'd come in and he'd learn the scheme very quickly, or already knows your scheme, and he'll give you 5 to 10 carries and a whole lot of veteran leadership. He's like a Carlos Beltran without all the cheating.
Yeah, yeah. No, right. He's not going to throw the franchise in harm's way by banging on a garbage can. Adam Schefter tweeted this earlier this morning, Seth. This offseason, the Packers offered Aaron Rodgers a 2-year contract extension that would have tied him to Green Bay for 5 more seasons and made him the highest paid quarterback and player in football. Schefter goes on to say Rodgers declined the offer. Proof it's not about the money. I would say this. Schefter said that.
Schefter, what the hell are you? Schefter, what the hell are you talking about? Proof that it's not about the money. It might not be about the money, but how does turning down one offer prove that it's not about the money?
Right.
Is this how the contract negotiations work? As long as I refuse one offer, then all of a sudden I've established myself as somebody who's above and beyond even caring about the money?
He might want more money. Like, this could mean it's even more about the money because whatever they offered, just because he's getting offered something that's making him the highest paid quarterback and player in football doesn't mean it's not about the money.
Schefter has entered a certain category that I like to call intelligent idiocy. He might be one of the dumbest intelligent people out there.
Mm-hmm.
Very successful, very intelligent, obviously on some level.
Hard worker.
But sometimes he says stuff that just doesn't make any sense. That doesn't make any sense at all. Proof that it's not about the money.
Okay,
go save it and stop revealing your sources so quickly and easily.
What is it proof of though, Seth? Like if we're to read into this behavior by
I'll read into it
by the. Well, I'm talking.
But it's not proof.
No. But I'm talking more from the Packers side. Okay,
yeah.
The Packers traded up to draft Jordan Love last year, presumably to be the quarterback of the future, and they, according to this report, were going to make Aaron Rodgers the highest paid player in football, and tack 2 more years on. Now, I think one thing we need to point out is that in the NFL, when Schefter sits here and says they offered him a 2-year contract extension that would have tied him to Green Bay for 5 more seasons, these are NFL contracts, okay? So it was certainly going to be a commitment of some sort, and it was certainly going to be a commitment that would have put the Jordan Love experiment on hold for, I would assume, at least another couple of years. If you're throwing money, I'm assuming some of this money they were throwing at Aaron Rodgers is guaranteed money, which means that there's big cap hits to get rid of him. I would need to see more of the actual numbers involved before I could make a for sure assessment of what it exactly means. But if I can just make a general assessment on the behavior of trying to extend him for two more years and make him the highest paid QB and player in football, this would clearly indicate to me that the Packers maybe regret drafting Jordan Love a little bit, or maybe aren't all that sold on Jordan Love. And it probably helps that Aaron Rodgers regained his MVP form last year.
Yeah, I think this is the one part that, and I think sometimes people tiptoe around this for some reason. Rodgers had not been nearly as impressive a quarterback up to the point when the Packers drafted Jordan Love.
Right.
He'd been a merely above average quarterback for a couple years who was heading into his late 30s. And really, you know, I think has always struck a lot of people as a guy who might ultimately be cool with walking away from football because he's not cut from the same cloth as a Tom Brady or a Peyton Manning or a Drew Brees.
Yep.
You know, he's never struck a lot of people as having that win at all costs, this is what I live for, this is the only thing that matters to me mentality. There were certain things about the way Green Bay did it that made sense. And that part of that might have been what spurred Aaron Rodgers into being as good as he was last year. Yeah, I think it worked out about as well as it could, but almost in the same way, it was doomed to failure if it did work out.
If someone had told the Packers before they drafted and traded up to draft Jordan Love, like the overall effect on Jordan Love's never going to play a snap for you, but you're going to get MVP level Aaron Rodgers back for the remainder of his career, I would have said, awesome. Where do I trade up how do I trade up to draft Jordan Love then? If Jordan Love is just an inadvertent means to an end, and that end is getting MVP Aaron Rodgers back because you lit a fire under his ass for some reason, then it's a worthwhile pick. And here's the thing. They could trade Jordan Love now. They're not going to get a first-round pick for him, I wouldn't guess. But they can flip him. He's basically turned into, if this report is true, And I still think Aaron Rodgers is under center for the Packers week one. I still think this is posturing. I still don't think he winds up getting traded to the Broncos or to any of the Raiders or any of these other teams. I think he's still the Packers quarterback. Then basically Jordan Love just becomes Josh Rosen. You know, you flip him to another team for a third round pick and you write it off.
You know, I was thinking about throwing some of the stats I could throw out to just illustrate that Aaron Rodgers hadn't been nearly as good a quarterback before they drafted Jordan Love over the last few years.
Yep.
And it really, honestly, I can keep it super basic because, for one, when Aaron Rodgers was at his absolute prime and peak, you know, before 2020, that was when, remember, he would throw 45 touchdowns to 6 interceptions,
yep.
39 touchdowns to 8 interceptions, 38 touchdowns to 5 interceptions. In 2017, 2018, and 2019, he threw – well, okay, 2017 doesn't count because he was injured. The 2018 and 2019, he threw 25 and 26 touchdowns.
Yep.
Like, relatively pedestrian numbers, especially by Aaron Rodgers' standards. That was the Aaron Rodgers that the Green Bay Packers were looking at, is, you know, coming off of a 36-year-old season where, they won 13 games, but there was a lot of luck involved in that 13-3 record. He just wasn't the same guy. He's a guy that has newfound leverage and maybe a newfound swagger when he returned to those astoundingly good numbers. Where this last year, 48 touchdowns, 5 interceptions.
Yeah, his QBR, because you just brought up QBR when we were talking about Tyrod Taylor. In 2018 and 2019, 58 and 52.5, barely above average.
In the lowest he'd ever been.
Right.
Like, by far, he'd never been in the 50s before. Those are the lowest he'd been in his entire career.
Led the league in QBR in 2020 at 84.4. 84.4. Yeah. Led the league in QBR. Led the league in traditional passer rating. Led the league in yards per attempt. An astronomical 9.6 yards per attempt. He had led the league in touchdown passes. Led the league in completion percentage. He is the reason he won the MVP. We just listed about 7 of them right there. So
yeah, this Schefter tweet is really annoying me. Like, somehow, so a 2-year contract extension, and we don't know how much it was for or anything.
Right.
Him turning that down proves that it's not about the money. Schefter, what the hell are you talking about? This is going to bother me all day, Sean. Somebody give me Schefter's number. I got to call him and ask him what the hell he's talking about.
Do you think that Schefter is getting fed the "it's not about the money" from somebody in Rodgers' camp?
Yeah, I think 100%.
Yeah.
It's I don't I why else would he say that? And like, why on earth? It doesn't make any logical sense. Well, Schefter, because Schefter does the same thing too. When Schefter talks about guarantees, all these guys do it. They'll say these practical guarantees.
Yeah.
Like, no, there's no such thing as a practical guarantee. If it's a practical guarantee, then that means it's not guaranteed. They'll inflate like $50 million in actual guarantees to somehow being $100 million in guarantees. Well, it's a practical guarantee. If he's on the roster 4 years from now, then they'll guarantee the rest of the contract. That's not a guarantee.
Yeah.
And that's when they're getting it from an agent. That's when they're getting their information from an agent, and the agent wants to look good, and there you go.
Are the biggest stories at the beginning of training camp next week? And training camp, of course, Camp Casario here in Houston, first practice is July 28th. Around the league, training camp is beginning for 29 of the teams on July 27th on Tuesday. That's when players are reporting to their buildings next week. There's three teams that start camp this week, the Cowboys, the Steelers, and I believe the Buccaneers. They all start this week. But Seth, when camp opens next week, especially because the Bucs are the defending champs and they'll have opened camp this week, are the biggest stories Aaron Rodgers and Deshaun Watson reporting to the buildings? Is that the biggest story next week? I think so. Yeah.
Yeah. The Aaron Rodgers one. The Aaron Rodgers one has the most intrigue because Aaron Rodgers has the most say so in whether he reports or not. You know, like Deshaun Watson, there are a ton of variables as to whether or not he shows up, and we don't know exactly what they are, right? So much is happening behind closed doors. With Aaron Rodgers, it's a simple matter of, does Aaron Rodgers want to be there or does he not want to be there? And we won't, he's not going to be there. He'll hold out. It'll be longer than a DeAndre Hopkins hold out.
Yep.
Remember when DeAndre held out for like 3 minutes?
Yes,
a few years back? I do. I think he'll hold out for at least the first week.
Yeah, I'll say this about the Deshaun situation is that I think you're right. There's a lot of variables involved. However, if the variables play out to where the decision is up to Deshaun as to whether or not he shows up, that to me is a way more intriguing situation than the Aaron Rodgers situation. You know what I mean? Like if the league steps in and says you're on the commissioner's exempt list, well, that's noteworthy. And certainly we'll be talking about it here on Sports Radio 610. But there's nothing salacious or dramatic about him getting thrown on the commissioner's exempt list. I think that's probably something that a lot of people expect to happen right now. But if the league, if by next Tuesday, Roger Goodell has done nothing and HPD has done nothing and there's been no movement on the civil suits and it's really just left up to the Texans and Deshaun Watson to figure out whether or not he shows up or whether they want him to show up, that is super. That's more intriguing than Aaron Rodgers, because Aaron Rodgers is intriguing because he's a defending MVP who is going to hold out because he's mad at his team. Deshaun, you've got all sorts of other stuff going on. So to me, if it's left up to Deshaun, if it's left up to the Texans, that's going to be fascinating next week. I can't wait.
Yeah, this is it's shaping up to be. You know what, Sean? I'm glad that the NFL is finally coming around to like agreeing with the rest of the world that the preseason games are a sham.
Yeah.
And that you might as well at least get rid of one of them, and likely two of them here coming up soon.
Yep.
And we can focus on the important things, which is Aaron Rodgers sad or not?
Yeah, that's the
stuff. Is Aaron Rodgers still sad?
That's the more relatable stuff. The Aaron Rodgers emotions. Seth, I'm sad because the show's over.
Adam Schefter right now asking if he went to the Bill O'Brien School of Negotiating.
Are you tweeting at him right now?
Yeah. It's not really a Bill O'Brien move, but it feels like a lack of grasping and negotiating.
Yes.
a detachment from actual ration and logic when it comes to
negotiating. It's the word proof that bothers me and you on that. Proof means that it's immutable truth, and it's not. It's just not. All right.
No.
Seth, antibodies to you, my friend. I'll see you at 6 a.m. tomorrow, bright and early.
Antibodies and successful negotiations to you.
Thank you very much.
And it may be an NIL deal to boot.
Hey, I need some appearance fees. We need to sign some
autographs. We both have plenty of NIL deals, let's be honest about it.
That's true.
And we both are still committed to winning college football games.
Yeah, but I want the one that gives me 10 grand for an afternoon of work. That's the one I want.
Rest easy, everybody.
That's right. All right, we're done. In the Loop is up next. Have a great day, everybody.
T-Mobile has invested billions to light up America's largest 5G network from big cities to small towns, including right here in yours.
And great coverage is just the beginning. Right now, families and small businesses can save up to 20% versus AT&T and Verizon when they switch. Visit your local T-Mobile store today.
Plan savings with 3 lines of T-Mobile Essentials versus comparable available plans. Plan features and taxes and fees may vary.
All right, football fans, the NFL Draft is almost here, and the free Odyssey app brings you the latest coverage from the biggest sports radio stations across the country. Which players will help your team the most? Who will make a draft day trade? Will they be ready for week one? The local conversations about the team you love. All streaming free right here on the Odyssey app. A-U-D-A-C-Y. Download it today.